Welcome to another episode of Let's Open a Bottle, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. It's been a while. We haven't checked in with this topic of Spanish wine. But this summer, I had a chance to take a look at some wines that I'm sure most of you don't know anything about. And I had the pleasure and the honor of seeing it for myself and visiting a winery. And I wanted to share it with you. Now, at the risk of upsetting the good people of the province of Huelva, which is in the region of Andalusia, I will start by saying that just about everything associated with this wonderful province would appear to be unknown to the average tourist, especially the foreign tourist visiting Spain, and even among a lot of Spaniards. Part of this has to do with the fact that this is kind of out of the way for many people. Huelva, which is spelled H-U-E-L-V-A, is sort of stuck snugly in the southwest corner of Spain, wedged between Seville and Portugal, and the famous Algarve coast, which is actually a lot more famous than Huelva. And I would say that it has an impact on the protagonism of this region, because the Algarve and Seville, they both take the attention away from this area. Having said that, let me tell you that Huelva is an amazing province. It has so much to offer. It has, for one thing, excellent beaches, some stretching out on for miles and miles. It's also historically famous for being the place where Columbus set out from Spain on his first voyage, on his way to discovering the New World. He left from a place called Palos de la Frontera. It's also notable for places like, towns like Ayamonte, Moguer, Almonte, and then finally you have the unforgettable El Rocío Sanctuary, or temple, or church. This is an incredible looking place, because one thing that makes it different from any other place I've ever seen in Spain is that its streets are covered in sand or dust. You feel honestly like you are in the middle of a Western. It has a lot of buildings, wooden buildings, with their porches, and most of them are not used most of the year. So it has sort of that semi-deserted look, and yet there's always people going in every day, because every year a major pilgrimage takes place to El Rocío, to venerate the Virgin of Rocío, because the Virgin of Rocío is one of the most important Virgin Marys in Spain. And every 7 years, the statue is taken from El Rocío, the town. It's dressed up as a shepherdess and carried to the nearby town of Almonte. And I tell you that because that happened just a couple of days ago. It takes place on August 19th, August 20th, and the people flocked there and took the statue to Almonte, where it will be in the church there for 9 months, I believe, before being taken back, and that would make sense, next spring. What else do you have in Huelva? You have the Rio Tinto mines. These are mind-blowing. They're still active, but they've been used since the Roman period. Very, very different landscape, like nothing you've ever seen before. And then you have, in terms of food, because food is very important in every part of Spain, Huelva stands out for its outstanding jamón from the town of Jabugo. Lots of ch there. Some of the most highly prized jamón of all of Spain. It also has excellent seafood, especially the red shrimp from Huelva, but it has a ton of other things. And then you have its wine, naturally, which, like the rest, much of the rest of the province, seems unknown to most travelers and wine enthusiasts alike. They're called condado. That means county. Condado de Huelva. Condado wines must be some of the least known in all of Spain. I've tried just a few over the years, because living in Madrid, you just can't find that many. But then you go down the Huelva and they're all over the place, so that was good to know. And they also do pretty well internationally. Now, despite its relative anonymity, Condado wines have actually have a very long history. In fact, they are one of the oldest denominación de origen regions, the protected regions in Spain. Before that, I think Rioja beat them out, but they were established officially in 1933, which was nearly at the very beginning of this system. As usual, winemaking in this area probably goes back thousands of years. We have to remember that you had the Phoenicians here, the Carthaginians, the Greeks, later the Romans, and so on. Then you'd have the Muslims here for many centuries, which sort of stunted the economic growth in that area. Wine, obviously, alcohol was not consumed by too many, although every once in a while the princes would dabble in it. But anyway, you know what I mean. This is an area, it's one of the oldest in terms of civilization, the oldest areas in the entire country. So it would follow that there would be wine production here for a very long time. And then once the Christian forces took over with the Reconquista, wine production started to increase again. So by the late 15th century, the wines were supplying much of the area all the way to Seville. It was also at this time, if you recall, that the Age of Discovery got started in Spain. And Columbus's voyages, as I was telling you, started from here, along with other trips, not just Columbus. Most of these voyages left from Huelva, or ports like Palos de la Frontera, and naturally they would take along wine. I mean, you'd take water, but you really couldn't trust water because it could go off and go bad so easily. Drinks like wine were more reliable, and especially if they were fortified, okay, they had more alcohol so they could last longer without, you know, going off. And given the difficulty involved with transporting wine long distances over land, it seems more than likely that at least some of the wine on that first voyage would have come from this area, from Condado. I mean, why not? I mean, why would they go anywhere else? There was no documented evidence of that first trip, but we're talking about an area that was producing some of the first wine to reach the Americas. Not long after that, in 1494 and in 1502, there is clear documented evidence of these wines being shipped to the New World. So we know they've been around for a long time. These wines did well until the 18th century, when they sort of were eclipsed by sherry. Sherry is a similar wine, the fortified wine, at least initially, and it was produced almost on the other side of Seville, to the south of Seville, in the province of Cádiz, in the town of Jerez, and places nearby there. But they made sort of a comeback, when I'm talking about Condado wines, in the late 19th century. Then they got pummeled by the phylloxera plague, just like just about everyone in Spain and Europe at some point. So it's been a very, very slow comeback. As I was telling you, they're relatively unknown even in Spain. But here's the good news. They are very recommendable wines. And business seems to be doing pretty well. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't really know what to expect. Sometimes you go to these regions, these really small regions, and you think, oh my goodness, I'm not sure if they're going to make it very much longer. They will, but it will never be one of those regions which have been around for a long time and then suddenly just sort of burst out into popularity, like Toro wines, Mencias from El Bierzo, and Reda wines. You know, those were regions that were not very well known outside of Spain. They were very local wines, and then suddenly they're big, big producers throughout Spain and the world. I'm not sure what the situation will be like for Condado wines in the near future, but maybe down the road, you never know, because I was pretty encouraged. There are currently, I think, 27 wineries in the region. And they're doing a lot of stuff. I mean, they do just about everything. They're all over the place. It's fun to see wineries that are excited about what they do, sticking to tradition and at the same time, wineries that are not afraid to try new things. The big hub is a town, are you ready for this, called Bolullos Par del Condado, mostly called just Bolullos. That's a tough one to say. That's where most of the bodegas are, but there are others in nearby towns. Just what kind of wine do they make? Do they make fortified wines, for example, like their nearby neighbors, Sherry? Well, it turns out that they cover just a wee bit of everything, which was sort of surprising the day we stopped by the winery. I mean, I wasn't surprised they were doing certain things like fortified wines, but I didn't realize they were doing some other stuff I'll tell you about in a second. The first thing that sets this region apart from the rest is its grape variety. It's a white grape known as Zalema, or Zalema, Z-A-L-E-M-A. That's how you spell it. Pronounced in Spain, mainly Zalema. This is a special point because this grape is basically used nowhere else in Spain, let alone in the rest of the world. And about 85% of the wine produced here is made with it. So that's one thing that says, hey, we're going to try a different wine grape. And because of that, we can imagine correctly that most of the wine, or Condado, is famous for its white wine. Dry white wine made from this grape. Sometimes they also make semi-sweet white wine. They are light, aromatic wines, slightly lower alcohol levels than you'd find in other regions in Spain, usually 10 to 12%. That makes them quite drinkable. They go down well. They're easy to accompany. Since they're light, they're to go with a meal. You also have your fortified wines, similar to the Finos and the Manzanillas in Jerez and the Olorosos and things like that. These two are famous and historic, but they are slightly lighter here. Once again, just like Sherry's a little bit richer, these are similar but a little bit lighter. What else? Well, they are making some sparkling wine and vermouth. And another real standout, this is a wine that makes it, now this really makes it different from the rest. This is the one wine that they make in this region that you will find nowhere else. And this is known as the Vino Naranja, orange wine. Now this should not be confused with this now popular term of orange wine, which is a white wine which comes into a long period of contact with the skins of the white grape and slowly begin to acquire a sort of a orangey, copper-like tone. This is a totally different story. To begin with, you use real oranges for a part of the process. What they do is they make their base wine, the white wine, and then it's fortified like a sherry. And they use mainly Pedro Ximénez. Pedro Ximénez is that really sugary, high sugar content grape that they use for sweet wines. But in this case, what they do after that share that has been prepared, the fortified wine, what they do is they add bitter orange peels. You know, there's these oranges that they make for marmalade, basically the famous orange marmalade. Uses the bitter oranges. That's not something you would use for orange juice, for example. And those peels are added and blended with the wine for at least 6 months, often longer than that. And then they are extracted, and the wine continues to go through an aging process, sort of in the classic Sherry Solera system, where they bring them, you know, they take them from one cask and to pass it on to the next, up and down, and they blend it so it all has acquired similar flavors and characteristics, even though the years are different. The result here is a sweet wine that is not as sweet as you'd expect, because Pedro Ximénez can be pretty sweet wine, sometimes too much for me, although some are really good. It can be a little bit too much at times. But this is different. That bitterness from the orange peels tapers the sweetness and adds complexity. It's a bit lighter, less rich, and it can go very well as a pre-dinner or a dessert wine. This process is unique to this region, unique to Spain, unique to the world. So that in itself should make these wines worth trying. then you can tell me, Brian, I like those wines or I didn't. That's a matter of personal taste. I particularly thought they were really good. And that was the day we stopped by a winery in Bolulos. We were actually going to check out another one, but it was closed. It was sort of midsummer. Sometimes these wineries will close down before the harvest. They take a break. So we sort of asked around for another one. And just around the corner, we came across we were told to go to a winery called Bodegas Oliveros, which is also another very famous one, very big one and well known. And we lucked out because we ran into a man there named Jose Luis, and he took us in and treated us like kings and queens immediately. Took the time to tell us about the wines. I was amazed. This is sort of typical Spanish behavior, but especially in Andalusia, they could have easily said, yeah, we'd go, these are the wines we had, this is what they cost, you do what you want. No, but he had probably spent 30 minutes telling us about all the different wines and how they worked and what they made and a bit of the history about this place. And it was amazing. Really nice guy. And it was a pleasure to have him show us around. He even gave us a little mini tour. Oliveros has been around for about 80 years. When in 1940, 85 years now, a man named Juan Oliveros Perea created the first winery, just after the Condado de Huelva had become a denominación de origen. From the beginning, Juan Oliveros was a sort of an avant-garde and enterprising man, a pioneer in this sector. He had a passion for work that led him to being the first to bottle the wine, or to have his own bottling plant in the area. That's certain things that might surprise you now, but 80 years ago, not all that wine was bottled. Then the next generation came in, and they continued to be at the forefront. For example, I think they were the first to use the cold treatment system for making young, fruity wines, these young Thelema wines, which I was telling you about. And then in the 21st century, the third generation has taken over and respecting the family tradition. But they now have focused on exporting their wine to different countries. From what I've been told, they're doing quite well, which is nice. They obviously will sell locally too and do quite well there too. But looking for, I think they're sold to something like over 20 countries. But as I'm going to tell you, these guys make a bit of everything. They are very active. Jose Luis, as I told you, took the time on the spur of the moment to explain all the types of products they had on offer, which was not limited by any stretch of the imagination. The white wine is light and easy to drink and very recommendable. That's made with the Thelema, and it's called Oliveros. They also have ventured into red wine with Tempranillo, which is a bold decision for the region because this is not red wine country, Andalusia in general. Although there's been a notable shift in the last decades towards making red wine and competing there. And there's a lot of stuff coming out. So we were happy to see that, and we thought the wine was good. You also have your fortified wines, finos, olorosos, creams. They have sweet wines with that Pedro Ximénez I was telling you about, a classic in Andalusia. And then they also have wine for mass as in church, mass wine. You can buy a bottle of that if you want. It's a sweet wine. And then they have the vermouths. These were amazing. They have a Crianza and a Reserve. Both were very, very good. I was a little more partial to the Crianza. But that might just be a matter of personal taste, but I love them. They were really good. Vermouths are also making sort of a comeback in Spain, in Madrid, for example, which actually has an old tradition in vermouth in the taverns, especially on the weekends or Saturday morning. Saturday mornings, by that I mean 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, or on Sundays. That's sort of vermouth time. Anyway, they also have that sparkling wine that I was telling you that the region does, specifically Cava. Now remember, Cava, C-A-V-A, is a wine region without a region. It's closely and logically associated with Catalonia because it's like 90-something, 95, 97% of the Cava is produced there. But there is a lot of cava that is also produced outside of that area. In Rioja, Valencia, and Extremadura are well-known producers. And here, as we have seen here in Huelva, they actually produce their own cava too. And to top it off, the latest project involves organic wines, a red and a white, under the amusing name, the Wine Egg Project. Now, the word egg in Spanish, huevo, is sort of the eternal informal reference in Spanish to testicle. They love to make jokes with it. It's been going on for as long as anyone can remember. But they don't use the word huevo, for obvious reasons. They stuck to the English. And this is their new project. It's organic wine. It was started in 2018. And it's called the Wine Egg Project. What they do is they use this system of these 2 meter high concrete eggs. They look like eggs. They really do. And they make exclusive batches of their organic wine. And what happens with the, because of the system and because of the shape and the material used for the containers, concrete, they have this unique effect of the spiral circulation within the container, within these eggs. So the wine gets greater complexity and structure naturally. You don't have to move the wine yourself. It just naturally does it. This system apparently goes back as far as winemaking has existed, although most people don't use that anymore. I might have to tell you more about it in a separate one because I can go on and on, but it's an interesting project. And finally, a special mention should go to its vinegar, something non-alcoholic. We especially enjoyed one that is called the Añada 1940. That means vintage 1940s. That is because this vinegar is aged in the Solera system that I was telling you about that they use. They mix vinegars, in this case, from different casks and different years. And apparently the original batch goes all the way back to 1940. So there are probably elements of this vinegar in the one that we bought. You just buy the small vial, basically a jar with a spray. And it was intense, tangy, complex, amazing vinegar. Amazing, wonderful stuff. So that's that. Most of the wines are sold online for under 10 euros and the vast majority for under 20. So we are talking about what I consider to be a great value for your money. The visit to the region was both positive and enlightening as well as encouraging. It's an amazing to learn firsthand about these historic wines that not a lot of people know about. They are made by winemakers who aren't afraid to be bold and try new things. So I welcome you to try them yourself, especially probably of all of them. Well, actually, you can try all of them because they're all really good. But if you want to try something really, really specific to the region, it's the orange wine. But the others are really good too. And let us know what you think. And that'll be all for this episode of Let's Open a Bottle, the podcast, the story of Spain's wine revolution. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, which I love, Spanish culture, which I love. And you can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Cheers, or salud, as they say in Spain. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.